You're listening to the Top Shelf Creator Podcast. On today's episode, I talked with my friend, Jason Rates, who is on a mission to help leaders speak with people, not at them. He is a captivating keynote speaker, a catalyst for laughter, personal growth, and a guide to profound communication transformation. He is the president of Speak With People, an organization dedicated to helping leaders improve their communication skills so they can expand their influence. Jason has been speaking professionally since 1996 and has taken the stage at over 500 events, speaking to more than 200,000 people. He is also the host of the Speak With People podcast, a podcast dedicated to giving leaders the necessary skills to become healthy and influential communicators. Lastly, and possibly most important, he is a huge fan of Hootie and the Blowfish. And on today's episode, Jason and I talked about how to clearly communicate in a way as the person who is the leader communicating, but also as somebody who's being communicated to when you have to communicate back. And these are really important as you grow your business, your career, as you talk with your spouse, your loved ones, your children, because of the fact that communication, when it's not done correctly, can be the number one thing that breaks down relationships. And if we're trying to communicate well, that means that we have to think about the relationships that we are having with the people around us and how we're engaging with them. So let's get started. Get ready to discover the best way to create a thriving business online from other creators and entrepreneurs just like you, who are making a full-time living doing what they love. I'm Cabrina Ashley, and as a former Disney trainer and consultant, I'm here to guide you in telling the right stories so you can be seen and heard by your ideal client. Each week, join me in conversations with industry leaders as we unveil the keys to crafting a sustainable business that helps you more than survive, but thrive. This is the first creator podcast to give you clarity, help you position yourself in the market, and harness your influence to scale your community. Welcome to the Top Shelf Creator Podcast. Shelf Creator, I am here with my friend, Jason, who is from Speak With People, and we actually met at a conference, and now he is in the mastermind that we are both in together, and so I've gotten to know Jason over the last couple of months fairly well, and it's fun because we both talk about speaking. We all like to be on stages, and because we like to be the center of attention, let's be honest. And so, Jason, I'd love for you to quickly tell us about you, how you got into this industry, and, you know, any of those little sparkly things that you want the listeners to know about you.
Wow. I love it. Well, thank you so much, my friend. It is an honor having this conversation with you. And you really are one of the most brilliant people I know when it comes to speaking systems, finding the best way to organize. I mean, you always have an answer. So I just appreciate your wealth of wisdom and how you open up the vault and you share it. So it's pretty spectacular. So appreciate you very much. 11 years old, I'm at a concert. And at the very end of the concert, the lead singer steps to the microphone and he starts speaking. And I was 11. I was short at 11. I'm still short at almost 49. It's something that has stayed the same. I'm still hoping I can get a second burst of puberty and maybe get a couple more inches taller. But I noticed at the end of this concert, the whole place went from loud, jumping, crazy to absolutely quiet. And it just stuck with me at 11 years old. I went home the next day. I built a stage in my parents' basement. And I went out to the neighborhood friends. And I said, my mom's making chocolate chip cookies. If you come listen to me speak from the stage, you get free cookies. And they did. And that kind of started at 11 years old, my love for speaking, all things standing on a stage, communicating. And so 1990, I'm going to age myself here. 8 is the first time somebody paid me money to speak on a stage. And I thought, wow, I could get paid for doing something that I absolutely love. And so since 98, I've been speaking pretty much. I'm kind of the guy that breaks the rules because a lot of people, you know, will say, hey, you've got to say no more often. And I just say yes a lot. So the early years, I said yes to, you know, all of the free speaking engagements I possibly could ever be in front. You wanted me to speak at your second cousin's, you know, wedding planner's funeral, I'm there. You wanted me to speak at, you know, I just always said yes. I spoke in nursing homes. I spoke in schools. I spoke over here. And so I've kind of kept that, you know, true. And so now as a professional speaker, I'm still sort of breaking the rules. I respect the line of wisdom that goes, there are riches and niches. But I'm kind of breaking the rule because 2 weeks ago, I'm speaking to elementary students in Peoria, Illinois. And the week before that, I was speaking to financial advisors in Cleveland. And so, you know, at some point I should probably not break the rule anymore and get super focused. But I love to communicate. So been married to my wife since 97. We have 5 kids, oldest 24, all the way down to 10. We have a couple of kids with autism, and so we're really passionate about the autism community. And we adopted our 5th, and so we're real passionate about adoption as well. So that's me in a nutshell. Probably the most important part of my sparkly story is that I am, I believe, the greatest lover, the biggest fan, and the most dedicated Hootie and the Blowfish rock band fan there is on the planet. So I have a whole Hootie wall in my office from the different concerts I've been to and the different events, and listen to Hootie all the time. So it was fun yesterday, actually, introducing you to some Hootie and the Blowfish songs.
Yes, I know. I was like, I've never heard these people before. And then you started sending things and I was like, oh, I have heard this one. This popular one I have heard.
Yes.
But it's so fun because I was actually telling another friend of mine that it was interesting to talk about your fascination and your fandom with Hootie and the Blowfish. And I was like, it's so cute because it's like me and Taylor Swift.
Right.
The amount of things that I'm like, oh, how can I correlate this back and how can we do this? But I wanted to circle back around to what you were saying about not having a niche, because I know that there's people in our community that are like, I'm eclectic and nobody understands me. And they're all raising their hands right now going, okay, so you think that you should niche down, but you're doing the thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's beauty in this idea of not having a niche, because your niche doesn't necessarily have to be the people.
Sure.
It could be what you're doing. And I
sure.
think you've done a really great job of how to communicate and how to really be clear on what you're coming to the stage with in a way to where you can communicate with elementary school students as well as executives in a bank. And then there's some other really great things about that is sometimes you have to talk to those executives and those bankers as if they are children.
Right.
Because we all have this. I joke, we just had somebody on the podcast that we'll be posting in a couple of weeks that is all about how parenting is basically how we handle our clients. And I have this conversation with clients all the time of, how did you figure that out and walk me through this so easily?
Yep.
And I'm like, I'm literally using the things that I use on my children that I learned from a parenting coach.
Yep.
And yep. it's a beautiful thing because all humans function the same. We just happen to get older and pretend like we're more mature in some way, shape, or form.
That's right. That's right. I love that. That's great perspective. Yeah, because I was speaking in New Jersey a few weeks ago at a middle school, and I'm listening to some of these middle schoolers are telling me some of the drama issues that they're facing. And then I was at an event in Orlando with bankers, and that night everyone's, you know, having drinks and talking outside. And I'm like, wow, these drama issues are the same.
Exactly.
But that's a great point you say about the niches, because, you know, definitely my topic is very niche. Like the problem that I solve is for whatever reason, some leaders just never feel like they're heard. They never feel like people listen to them. Maybe they stand on a stage and they quickly notice that people are already checking their phones and, you know, they're trying to figure out, wait a minute, why is my communication not getting through? And so, you know, really I help leaders be healthy and influential communicators. So people will lean in when they speak, whether it is one-on-one, if they're speaking on a team, if they're on a stage or from a screen, like we're talking now. I was just coaching a client this morning who wants to improve their on-screen communication. Mm-hmm. And there's a way to do that. So people will engage more. So that's a great point you made about the niches.
And absolutely. And that's the thing about, it doesn't matter how old you are. I think we have this standard of, once I get to this stage, once I get to this position, once I reach whatever check mark you need, then we become a leader. When really, we have to lead ourselves consistently.
So
we have
good.
To lead the people yep. around us. We have to lead our families. And that's how then we can lead in organizations. And yep. it's honestly where organizations have a lot of issues when it comes to leading, is that yep. they think that because you do your job well, all of a sudden that gives you the qualities of being a leader, which is yep. something else that you train people on, is how do we actually lead using this clarity and communication?
Yep. Absolutely. No, I love that. That's right on. And it's so incredibly important, because at the end of the day, it's time and time again, there's so many studies, there's so much research. Someone's communication skills really is the reason that they either vault forward or they continue kind of staying stagnant in their leadership and their profession and their career and their life. And so I think of it a lot like breathing. We all breathe every single day. I don't know how many breaths we take. I got to be real careful when I say that, because I was doing a podcast not too long ago and I was using this illustration. And when I went to say breaths, something else came out. And I was like, oh boy. All right. But we take breaths all day long. And I probably take the large majority of them for granted, because I just do it all day long. But the moment I get sick, the moment I have some type of respiratory thing, all of a sudden I'm like, what's happening? Why is this? I think it's the same with our communication. Most research shows we communicate up to 80% of our day, whether it's words, tone, body language, email, text messaging, video. I mean, 80% of our day is communicating. We just do it all the time, that we start taking it for granted. And maybe we don't miss some of the poor, unhealthy communication habits that have slipped in, that that maybe the people who are closest to us aren't calling us on, because it's just Jason. He just does that thing. He's sarcastic like that, or he interrupts people, or he just doesn't listen well. And either we're ignoring it, other people aren't saying it, and then we just kind of keep going. And those unhealthy, this is what I call speaking at habits. This is kind of being an at-hole. This is, you know, someone who's just, I'm an unhealthy communicator. You're not paying attention to it. It starts to build a wall. Somewhere I have boxes, because I use this as an illustration in my training, virtual trainings that I do. But you just start putting up this wall between you and the person. And you wonder, wait a minute, why is the connection, it doesn't seem as steady as it once was? How come they don't return my text as quickly? You know, it's been like a day since they called me back. They're not responding to the email. Well, maybe it's because a wall's being built between your communication and the way you're communicating. You're just speaking at people, and you've let this unhealthy stuff in. And when you start to address it, when you start to go, you know what? Okay. Even the whole James Clear Atomic Habits stuff, even if it's 1% a day, and I go, okay, all right, my kid just called me on the fact that I always interrupt them. Okay. So I've got to work on pausing before I speak. Are they done? You know, so it's those little kind of things. It's just so tremendously important, because it really will. Healthy and effective communication skills will vault a leader forward in their influence. And I always say healthy and effective, because, you know, effective communication is all the rage, right? A leader should be effective. They should be effective. I just know enough jerk communicators who are very effective. They get their point across. They force it down people's throats. They, you know, people jump out of fear because they're the boss, or they're the person on the team that is the loudest. And so that's why I'm like, okay, be effective, but be healthy in the process. Because if your inner world isn't healthy, what comes out is not going to be healthy. So
absolutely. And a lot of this is subconscious too. And so you have this issue of, you might be doing those little tiny things and it's just a pinprick and then a pinprick and then a pinprick.
So good.
And then all of a sudden we have this giant paper cut. It's the death by 1,000 paper cuts.
Yes.
And then you don't realize, people don't always even tell you, because they don't realize what's happening. You say something and they go, that didn't make me feel good. And then they go and do the task that you asked them to do, or they go about their day. And then that's when somebody finally blows up and goes, okay, enough is enough.
Yep.
And the flip side of that is that you could be communicating really well. So I'd love for us to have a conversation about the idea of when people communicate back, because there's definitely healthy and effective communicators that communicate one way, But what I've seen, especially over the last couple of conversations that I've had with communicators, is that they have a hard time getting people to communicate back to them, even when they are healthily and effectively communicating, because of fear, past traumas from other leaders that they've had, and getting people to communicate back when you are in that situation where you're not just on a stage, because you might be in a meeting, which would we could consider your stage at that point.
Right.
And we're communicating something and waiting for somebody else to respond to that email, or having to prod a little bit more. And then you have that flip side of it starts to get annoying for the person who is healthily communicating, which then has a fall into old habits.
Yep. Oh, it's so good. Yeah. And I think this is why it's so important for every leader to become a people, to study, I mean, to be, how am I going to word this? To study people. I mean, to be a peopleologist. I'll say it that way.
I like that.
To be a peopleologist. Because we do, we get in this rut and we're like, everybody communicates like me. So that's why it's so important, you know, whatever personality test, whatever thing is your thing. You know, I love the DISC because I think it helps. And especially if I'm able to know that, or the Enneagram, or, you know, whatever that one is, if you have some basic knowledge of one of those things. So when I'm approaching those relationships, we'll take the Enneagram, for instance. I'm a 4 on the Enneagram. Well, 4s are unicorns. You know, we're the oddballs, we're feelers. We sense everything going on. My 10-year-old son's watching Finding Dory a lot right now. And there's a clip in there where there's a whale shark at the end, whale shark or a beluga whale. That's like, you know, it can kind of feel and sense what's going on in the ocean from great distances away. You know, that's kind of my personality. Like, people walk into the room and I'm like, ooh, there, something's going on with them. But I have to know that, like, when an 8 walks in the room, that's not what they're thinking. You know, an 8 walks in the room and they're like, okay, I'm in charge. Let's get going.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And me, I'm like, hey, let's hang out. Like, let's tell a few jokes.
You.
Yeah.
Yes.
So just having that basic understanding of how people are wired, you know, there's another way to look at it. You know, is your communication style more personal? Being that, hey, you want to take that minute to kind of, you know, figure out who they are. Is it more analytical? You know, are you just thinking through that lens of, you know, and so, yeah, I mean, being able to have a good overview, a good knowledge of, you know, one of those, there's so many great ones to pick from. And then on the other end, a little shameless plug, but I have a podcast called the Speak With People podcast. Mm-hmm. And last fall, I interviewed 2 amazing women leaders from the Duarte company, great communication company. And they wrote a book called Adaptive Listening. So being just, you know, a listener that, hey, I'm going to be fully present. They say, hey, get to know your said listening style, SAID, and they walk through each of those. So an S listener is somebody who is terribly supportive. So this is the person in your workplace, you know, if you go to them and you need somebody to just listen, okay, they're going to support you. They're going to be, you know, sitting there and, you know, helping you walk through each of those. And so this whole book, Adaptive Listening, helps you walk through that whole listening process. So you know, not just how I communicate, but then how I listen. Mm-hmm. And so then if you have an idea of how other people listen, you're like, okay, I can, you know, I can figure it out. And then the other thing I would say about that, there are some common traits to it, because, you know, all of us, we really can work on not interrupting someone else. We can work on our pausing skills. We can work on being attentive while we're listening to someone and not being, you know, I mean, this is the day and age of technology, right? So I'm like, every few seconds, if, you know, I'm on my device when I'm trying to have a conversation, all of those things just break the communication. I mean, and that's the crazy thing that happens, and we don't even realize it sometimes. It's like those little tiny, like you talked about before, those little tiny cut marks. You know, it's like, okay, oh, he did it again. He did it for the 1,000th time. He picked up his phone. Will he ever just fully engage with me? You know, those are, I mean, so terribly important.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, getting back into the dating world, I've realized some of these communication things on a different angle. And watching people do the phone thing, because communication to me is like a hug. You cannot hug people when you're closed in because it just doesn't work. You can't let people in. And that's why we want to stand with our shoulders back. We want to have our hands out. We don't want to close ourselves off. And as soon as we pick up a phone, we've closed off that piece to now the communication is here versus here.
Yep.
And then people feel like they're not being seen and heard, which we know is the number one thing that people want. Four is, of course, on the Enneagram, more so because we can relate in that direction. But the same thing happens with other people.
Right.
They get angry when they don't get seen and heard because then they feel like they're not leading in the right way. And then they feel like they need to have it. They need to be harder about that. Nines, who tend to be a little bit more peacemakers, yep, they're going to be the people who pull back and then stop asking for help, which we see in organizations of people that the work's not getting done. Innovation isn't happening. Creativity isn't being put in place, but it's because of the way that we're communicating with people and then asking the questions afterwards instead of just communicating. And how do you deal with that with people, especially leaders who are a little more rough around the edges and they're in there, they're very authoritative and they want to get in, get out and get done? How are you helping them communicate in a way that makes sense? And then on the flip side of that, so this is a double question for people who are in that situation, because we do have some people who are 9-to-5ers still, how can you help them handle it in a way to where they can take it in as constructive, even when the person's being a, how do you don't call them an asshole, you call them a at-hole.
At-hole.
Yeah. When they're being an at-hole, how they can take that in as the listener and go, okay, let me learn from this and still have some kind of semblance of good communication.
Right. I mean, these are two great questions because here's the reality. Like, especially in a workplace, you work with people all day long and it's amazing. Even though words make up 7% of our conversation, the total communication, it's only 7%. 38% is our tone, just how our voice comes across. 55% is our body language. So, wow. Okay. I mean, we're saying so much through our body language, our eye contact, the roll of our eyes. We're saying so much through our pausing. We're saying so much through, you know, how our tone is. And so if you're working with those at-holes or, you know, those people who are just every time they just come in and they dump all of that stuff on you, they don't realize, especially, you know, if there's someone, you know, from with a personality who absorbs all that stuff, that can stick with you for weeks. I mean, you go home and you know, all of a sudden you're not eating, you're dreaming, you got a nightmare of them, all because of these words that were said to you. And again, 7% is just words, but those words carry so much power because they create, they shape us, they stick with us. So that's why, back to your first question, it's so important to have a healthy inner world. So to do the hard work of, you know, we talk all the time about being physically healthy. Yes, so important to be physically healthy. Exercise every single day, to drink water, to eat the right foods. I mean, my goodness, I have an older son with autism. One of the things that finally a doctor pointed out to us is, and we knew this all along, but it was like one of those no-brainers, the food that you eat has massive, massive effects on your body. And so, you know, I come from a line of folks with diabetes. Well, okay, I need to understand that if I pile on the sugar all of the time, like my whole body, my mind, everything just slows down and I'm just not at my best. And when I'm not at my best, I'm sarcastic, I'm deeply critical. You know, I think my gift to the world, I love to use words that bring hope, that bring encouragement. I love to make people laugh, you know, whether it's in from the stage, whether it's in team meetings, whether it's in the podcast, face-to-face, whatever it is. I think laughter is this unbelievable gift that we need to give each other. But if my inner world is not healthy, all of those things kind of disappear from my life. And all of a sudden my family's going, how come dad's being a jerk again? How come this is happening? How come he, you know? And so we've got to really watch our inner world. And it's not just about our physical health. It's about our mental health. You know, are we dealing with, you know, all of those voices? Vanessa Van Edwards calls them the gremlins. you know, that convince us we're not good enough, we're not talented, we're not going to succeed, this is never going to work out. You know, are we working on those in a healthy way? Are we talking to somebody about those? You know, the emotions of it, are we working on our emotional intelligence? Are we paying attention to our feelings? Are we keeping track of all of that? If we're people of faith, are we leaning into our spiritual lives? Are our finances in order? Do our relationships? So all of those areas make up our inner world. If our inner world's not healthy, what comes out is not going to be healthy. So in those situations, you know, and especially if we're a 9-to-5er, we want to search for a company that has a healthy workplace culture that cares about the inner and the outer world. I had the honor the other day of interviewing a woman on my podcast, Deanne Turner. She was she retired from Chick-fil-A after 33 years. She was a VP of talent, her last run with them. And so she was, you know, big part of the responsibility for what they look for in people and what they look for in operators and all that. And we just talked about the healthy culture aspect. And so if you can search for a 9-to-5 job that has a healthy culture, because if you just settle, and I know I have 5 kids, we have to pay the bills. You know, we're both in the 5 kid club. Mm-hmm.
I know, right?
I mean, it's, yeah, those people with 1 or 2, like, come on, you got so much time on your hands. But searching for that kind of company who cares for people that deeply, you're still going to run into them, but you're going to run into less of that holes, you know, less and less, because you can get to a place in a healthy culture, to answer the second part of your question, where you can actually call it out. Mm-hmm. And you can say things like, hey, I just want you to know that exchange that we had earlier, just help me understand where that was coming from, because it seemed harsh. It seemed overly critical. It seemed offensive, and that's not you. And so what happened? And a lot of times when we have that kind of more difficult conversation, which is almost impossible sometimes, right? Because we have all these voices that convince us otherwise. You can't bring that up to them. Oh my goodness, you can't bring. But we have to, in order for the health of our relationship, the health of our leadership, the health of our communication. So when we have that healthy conversation where we're like, hey, I just need you to help me understand what happened there, because I walked away feeling like, and then it's really interesting to see what happens in an unhealthy organization. Woo-wee. You know, unhealthy organizations, sometimes those at-holes are just given the liberty to get things done. And so, you know, their model is, doesn't matter who I got to step on or walk over, or those kind of things. And so if you're in that kind of situation, ooh, you know, I hope that you're able to, you know, find something new. But if you're not, search for that organization, search for that culture where you don't, you know, we're always going to deal with those situations because people are people. We're going to be the person on that end sometimes, but you know, take those chances to make sure, take those opportunities to make sure you're working on your own health. You're in a place where that's encouraged. So everybody's working on it, because then it's, you know, those kind of harder conversations are going to go much further, much further.
Yes. And this brings up the idea of boundaries too, because this idea of being able to be the person on the recipient end and say, hey, that exchange was not okay, or that's not who you are, if that's really the case for that person, and saying, I will not accept being talked to like this. And here's how we can move forward from this.
Yeah.
Because even when things are like, don't talk to that person, because I mean, we see this in everyday friendships and relationships too, of somebody's feelings get hurt and somebody says something that's out of line and we go, well, maybe they didn't mean it that way. And we start to make excuses for them, which then just perpetuates this bad communication happening back and forth until somebody finally blows up. And I think that's really what we've gotten out of a bunch of the things that we've talked about so far, is that when communication is bad, it just starts to pile on until something burns down.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, there's, you brought something up. My old brain is processing. It will come to me. But it's those things just start piling on. And if we don't deal with them, and sometimes we on the receiving end, we've got to take a second just to go, okay, that did not feel right. Let me just double check it. One, am I being too sensitive? Two, am I just assuming the worst? You know, because we play this assumption game all the time. I mean, it's just amazing. What was that?
So in some of these, it will actually do balloons. So see, it just means that it was a good thing that we're talking about.
Man, that's amazing. Riverside loves this conversation. So we play this assumption game, right? And we're like, why did they say that? And then we spend all this time, all this brain energy of going, I just start assuming the worst, you know, like, oh, this is everything. Oh, you know, and really we come back to them and they're like, did I say that? Oh man, I didn't realize it. You know, now that's not always the case. Sometimes they absolutely did, you know, those kind of things happen all the time, but to be able to have those boundaries back to your point, you know, and just to be able to say, hey, I'm not going to be spoken that way. I mean, I talked to my mom, who is one of my heroes in life, tough woman, grew up with abusive parents, city of Detroit, was on her porch during the 1967 riots where the National Guard came in and took, you know, took them all out as her whole neighborhood's being burned down. She had a dad who loved her, but I mean, this is the early 70s. You know, my grandfather was like, why do you need to go to college? You're just a woman. And so she was a straight A kid in high school, never went to college, you know, just kind of had that ingrained in her. And then when she was in her 30s, went back to college. You know, she already had young kids. And then after that, she went back and got her master's degree. And then because it was in counseling, she had to get the 2000 hours of, you know, all of that stuff. She got that. And so I've just seen her fight and fight and fight and go. And, you know, I've learned, you know, so incredibly much from her to be able to say, okay, you know, before these kind of things happen, I've got to think through them. I've got to figure out if this is, you know, the right time that's happening and everything that's, you know, facing it, because if I don't, you know, what am I going to do? So, I mean, it's just powerful stuff when we get to that place and we're able as leaders to go, okay, well, no, we're going to strive to have this healthy communication. And that's why I love, one of the things I get to do is I get to lead I call it the healthy communication skills training. Probably needs some more pizzazz name. But
We
walk through all of that kind of stuff. Cause really at the end of the day, we say, hey, if you're going to build trust with your clients, you're going to build trust with the people in your life, you're going to deepen that relationship and the connection's going to be stronger. You've got to consistently improve your communication skills.
Yes.
And so we walk through those. What are some communication skills that you can improve? Cause it's so incredibly important.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I actually had a meeting with somebody this morning who's in the learning and development space, and we were talking about soft skills and hard skills and how communication, creativity, all of these things get bulked into soft skills because
right.
It's not, how do I program a computer? How do I make a sale? How do I do these things that seem at face value to be more important for a business? And what he was saying is that in Singapore, they actually call them signature core skills.
Huh.
And I was like, that, my friend, is different. And he's like, it changes the whole conversation, because then you're asking the question of what's the signature core skills that people in your organization need to know. And then it elevates what creativity, what communication is at in the
space.
That's
good. Yeah.
And when he said that, I was like, oh yeah, that makes total sense of why people don't think about this. Because the only reason that we even call them soft skills in the first place is because when they came up with these terms, it was in the military. And
right.
So if you weren't working with a metal thing, that was the hard skill. If you did anything else that was not related to guns or machinery, it was considered a soft skill. And they begged them years later to change the wording of it. And it was so ingrained in them. And once the military does stuff, it's kind of just stuck there forever. And we've taken that into the corporate world and people go, well, that's not as important. But when you look at applications, what are the things that they're begging for? Out of the box thinkers who are creative and innovative, who can communicate well and have great writing skills, which then leads into communication. Because how can I write well if I can't speak well? Because that whole idea of I need to be able to have that clear, conscious thought of what I'm bringing to the table so that I can then write it down and then I can communicate it in a verbal sense. And I mean, I've heard people for years, I'm a great writer, but I'm a terrible speaker.
Yeah.
Cool story, bro. You have all the skills. This is just a practice problem.
Right.
Not an actual core problem that we have.
Right.
and so we had talked about before we started recording the idea of clarity and how do you actually organize those thoughts? Because people will come to you and say, they'll say things like, I don't have any original thoughts. I'm very vanilla. I don't have the ability to do this. I'm scared to get out there. So then that makes me feel jumbled. And those are things that are really, they're a learned process. And that whole idea of fail, it's the first attempt in learning.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
And so how do we give people the ability to say, we're giving them the permission slip of it's okay to fail the first time. It's okay to get on a podcast and totally bomb it. It's okay to get on stage and bomb it. It's okay to be in a meeting and then creating a culture around that. But then you're actually teaching the clarity piece. So can you give us some ideas for people who are listening of that? How do I become clear on the message that I want to put out there? Because nobody wants to go into a podcast or on a stage or in a meeting and bomb it, because not every culture has that as the ability.
Right.
So as they're preparing for this and, you know, talking to their partner, talking to their kids, talking to a friend, as they're practicing, how can they get more clear?
I love that. You know, I take the advice from the great Dunder Mifflin regional manager. He was in the Scranton, Pennsylvania branch. His name is Michael Scott. And he said, sometimes I just start a sentence and I hope that I catch up with it along the way. You know, I'm like, no. Much as I love Michael Scott, that's not quite the way to go. You know, you said something about fear there a second ago. You know, so often we talk so much about, you know, that one-on-one communication, and now even with some of that clarity in the one-on-one, and you know, when I'm up in front of people, when I'm leading a camera, or I'm leading a training over a camera, we just want to search for that clarity, but fear gets in the way. And the reality is we're only born with two fears. We're only born with two. There are over 2,000 documented classified fears. I mean, there's everything, right? Fear of peanut butter sticking to your mouth. Like, that's a real fear. People actually have it. Fear of belly buttons. Probably some people need to fear some belly button. But those are real fear. And we all know the popular one, right? There's a fear of public speaking. There's a fear of speaking in front of people, whether it's at a kid's birthday party, your team huddle, you know, during, you know, each week, and you're just standing in the corner hoping that your boss doesn't call on you because, oh my goodness, what am I going to say? I'm going to sound stupid. That's what a lot of people say, right? I don't want to sound stupid. I just can't formulate thoughts quickly. And so of all of those fears, we're only born with two. Loud noises and the fear of falling. That means all of those other fears, they're learned. Like, we learn all of those fears. And so I don't think public speaking is the number one fear anymore. I keep seeing some data that it's like dropped to number two or three, but that's still crazy, right? That we're still, you know, the majority of people are still like, no, I'm not ever getting up in front of people. That's just not what I'm doing. But here's the reality. Preparation is your friend when it comes to clarity. So if you have the right structure, if you have the right template, clarity really will help calm fears. Clarity will help give you confidence. Clarity will bring a sense of, wait a minute, I do have something to say. And so if you really befriend clarity, if you think, you start thinking through, okay, how can I be absolutely clear when I'm, you know, even if it's something as simple as you're in a networking event and you're given 30 seconds to introduce yourself to a huddle worth of people, do you know what you're going to say? I just walked a client through this morning. I said, are you ready? Because don't just start with your name and what you do and how long you've been there, because everybody's so addicted to those, right? Oh, my name's Jason. I've been a software engineer for 17 and a half years. Wow, that's wildly specific. Like, we're wildly specific in those areas because they help build up our identity. So instead of starting with that, why not start with something like, hey, do you know, have you ever been on your phone and your app crashes? Isn't that a pain in the ass? Well, my job is to make sure it doesn't crash. Like, I mean, wow, okay, that person's going to stick out to me because I'm now, you know, creating a sense of clarity in the story. I'm now creating a memorable moment. And so having the right structure, you know, really helps. For me, my little company, Speak With People, we've actually unleashed a product recently called the Presentation Blueprint. And this is purely, okay, if you're in the public speaking, I'm going to give a presentation in front of a group of people, but the template works the same. If I'm doing a 30-second introduction to a meet and greet, a networking event, if I'm sitting down for coffee with someone and I've got to walk through why I believe about something or they've asked me, if I'm standing up in front of my kids' classroom and I get to, you know, speak about something, or if I'm doing a presentation. And so for me, this presentation blueprint, we've put 6 different steps in it, but I'll just kind of give you the second step, and you can download this for free at speakwithpeople.com/the presentation blueprint. It's a long URL. But for me, I'm always thinking through the first part of that is the problem. Okay, so if I'm going to speak about something at some point to someone or to a screen or to a camera or from a stage, I'm always thinking about the problem. Like what is the problem they're facing? How does it affect them negatively? Does it disrupt their daily life? Does it affect the majority of people that I'm talking to about this? Because maybe it only affects a really, really small amount of people. And so then at that point, as I'm starting to kind of figure out the problem, now I'm just going to get crazy and I'm going to research like nuts. I was never on the super highly intelligent type in school, in the sense that I struggled with tests. I mean, I scored my age on the ACT. I took it again and I scored an age lower. You know, I mean, I struggled on those things. So I had to make up for it with like super, super research. And I had, you know, if you come to my office, there's books everywhere, because I'm always trying to figure out what did they say about it? What did they say about it? What do I believe about it? What's the data show about it? What are great stories? So the first part of finding that clarity is just what's the problem? You know, what's the situation that is kind of holding people back? Mm-hmm. Then I look through the key area from that. Okay, so say the problem then is what could be the problem?
Not getting enough leads.
You're not getting enough leads, you know? Okay. So that's just it. So now I've got to search for a key area. What's the key area of that defines the problem? This is the big picture of what you're going to talk about. This is the 30,000 foot view. This kind of falls in line with what everyone's kind of facing together. So if I'm not getting enough leads, so now I'm narrowing it down. It kind of works as a funnel. This whole thing kind of works as like you think about the old school cartoons of like a gold prospector, you know, the old crotchety guy, and he's like hammering on the mountain and he's got that little gold pan and he's got, you know, dirt in there and he's got it in the water and he's just kind of shifting it and he's trying to get rid of all of the other excess stuff so he can just find the one gold nugget. This is what this template, this clarity template does, is it helps you get to that gold nugget. So then you got the problem, people aren't, you know, getting enough leads. So now, okay, I've got to find the key area of that. Well, maybe the key area is your SEO is not, you know, you don't even have any SEO. So it's like, oh boy, I don't have anything. So then I go from the problem to the key area to the focused idea. So when it comes to this whole topic, this idea, what's the short, crystal clear, focused idea that I'm concentrating on? It's just got to be practical. It's got to be real. And this is if the key area was the big topic, now the focus is like that up close picture. So I go from not getting enough leads to maybe, okay, the SEO's broken. And so now the focused idea is, how to fix my SEO, or, you know, how to structure it properly, or how to find the best ones. So now I'm kind of working down each of those. And then I think through the no. Like when it comes to all of this, like what is my audience? What is the person I'm speaking to? What do they need to know about the problem? What's the focused area? How does it affect them? And really, what are the positive things that are going to affect them if you change? Because in the beginning, you start with the negative, because you're like, nobody's visiting your business. You know, what's happening with all of it? Well, it could be because your website's not being found. And so imagine what happens if your website's being found. You know, the phone rings off the hook and the emails come in, and, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you've got a jet and you're flying to a Taylor Swift concert, you know, and I mean, bringing up Taylor for you. So now I'm working on the no, and I'm working on all of that to then I get to the big idea statement. And the big idea statement is the the one line that should resonate deeply, spark understanding. This is like the rallying cry that gets to like some real resolution and impact. So, you know, I keep working on that. So I take all the research that I did. I think about the problem, think about the key area. I think about the focused idea and the no. And now I write that one line that's like, boom. And this is the thing. If you're a public speaker, this is the thing that's so valuable, because when someone, you know, say you're talking to a friend and they say, oh, hey, what are you doing this weekend? Oh yeah, I'm going to, you know, this event and I'm speaking at it. And they say, what are you speaking about? What are you speaking about? Whoo, the big idea is your friend, because now you have the one line answer to that, that should answer in a way that hooks them, draws them in, and gives them clarity about what you're talking about. You know, I'm going to talk about how, you know, the everyday business leader can drastically improve their leads when they fix their SEO. Boom. Okay. What it is. That's what it is. Now I have the clarity. So then as you keep working through this template, the next part then is what I call the bridge. And the bridge, this is your main points. And for me, when I speak, I always have three main points. It's worked kind of since the dawn of time. You know, Shakespeare wrote in three acts. Donald Miller has a bunch of research on this, how our brain is kind of wired in 3 points. Mm-hmm. Yes, sometimes you have to go 4 or 5, but if you're at 17, you're at seven. And
it's very much a musical thing too.
Absolutely.
Dun, da, dun, da, dun.
Exactly. And it's so how we think, mm-hmm. right? So now I kind of go through those. Okay. So these are the things that now I call them the bridge, because they support my big idea up. You know, you think about like they're holding it up. They're taking me from the problem to the solution. And so, you know, I'm going to fix my SEO. Number one, I'm actually going to hire someone, you know, or whatever it is. Number two, I'm going to make sure I'm, you know, checking ChatGPT for what the best, you know, SEO links would be. And then number three, you know, whatever each of those are. And then for me, I then think through what I call creative assets. So what are the super creative things that I can bring into this presentation, or really this conversation, or this pitch, or this update to my team, whatever it is, because I want it to be memorable. I don't want it to just be like, okay, hey, thanks, Jason. That was so boring. Walk off the stage, or, you know, be done with the conversation. Yeah. I want it to be memorable. So are there images? Are there stories? Is there music? Is there a prop? Is there data? Is there graphs? You know, I mean, whatever all that is. Okay. So I'm going to put that on. And then I have two last steps to this process. I think about the do. This is your call to action. And so it's great that now you have this solution. Okay. I'm going to fix my SEO. Here are the things I'm going to do. But now, boom, here's your strong call to action to say, get off your butt, get this done. This is how you can get it done. This is the, you know, a takeaway. And then for me at the very end, especially as I'm doing a presentation, I always write the title at the last thing, last time, the very last thing I do. I used to write at the very beginning, and now with the YouTube world and clickbait and SEO and all those kind of things, I wait till the very end, because now I have all this material and I'm like, okay, this is all great stuff. So let me think about a title then that I would be proud to put this on YouTube, because maybe people are actually searching for this. So that's for me. That for me, and you know, and again, you can get the template for free at speakerpeople.com/the-presentation-blueprint. I went through that very quickly, but it just gives you this guide to be able to find that clarity. You know, even if it's a huddle at work and they're like, okay, hey, you need to lead the huddle and you need to explain to them, you know, why we're doing X, Y, and Z or whatever it is. Okay. All right, now I've got kind of a template so I can focus down my thoughts and get really, really clear. Because I found through my own life, when I prepare with clarity, so I spend time in the preparation process, I do the research, I work on my words, I wrestle with the ideas, I get them down to a pack that I can call a friend and say, what are you talking about this weekend? Boom, I can say it like I don't have to trip over my words. That's when I can deliver with confidence, because I've done all the hard work on the front end. And what I'm doing is I'm making it all not about me, but I'm making it about my audience or the person I'm talking to or the team I'm addressing. And so now I just have to deliver. I gotta just take all this great stuff and I gotta say, hey, this is yours. And it may not take away every single nerve. It may not take away, you know, all that kind of stuff, but it sure does help. Clarity. I love Dr. Brené Brown says clarity is kindness, especially in one-on-one conversations. If you walk away from a conversation and you're like, what did they say? Mm-hmm. You know, that when, if you don't have to do that in your conversations, it's so healthy. It's so important for that relationship. And then especially if you're presenting, especially if you're, you know, getting up in front of people at some level, to have that clarity that the whole room goes, okay, yeah, this is what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Money in the bank.
And then it's so much easier for people to talk about it later.
Mm-hmm.
Have those things that we take away that are basically the little doggy bag that people take with them after you've spoken.
Oh, I love that.
How do I get the leftovers of this?
Yes.
Because then that's where we hear the testimonials come from. That's when people start working with us because they're like, oh, you said this, and this is what hooked me in.
Yep. And
one of the things that you said about that idea of opening the loop for people and then closing it for them and doing something that really catches attention. And so that's really the important
yes.
part here of what we need to do as presenters. But like Jason said, do you want to give the URL one more time? It's...
Yes, speakwithpeople.com/thepresentationblueprint.
Beautiful. And so we have one question that we ask all of our people at the very end of this. And
yes.
that is, if you had a warning label, what would yours be?
What would my warning label be? I think it would be healthy irreverent. Because there are going to be moments with my humor that I push the boundaries, I push the lines, but I do it to get people to laugh, to open up. And I hope to do it in a healthy way. So I'm like, hey, like if we're sitting around hanging, you'll probably get a dose of some healthy irreverence. So we can just, you know, look at life and go, okay, hey, this kind of stuff happens, but let's laugh about it and let's enjoy it. So
I love that. That'd make a great t-shirt for you.
Yes, I love it. Yeah, and especially you caught some of that after spending a week mm-hmm. in Tennessee at the Mastermind.
We had some good times, man. We did not get to talk as much as we should have.
I know, and I resonate with you because I'm like, okay, this is a person who like says it, and I love that because we're like, let's just put it out there. Like enough, you know, behind the bushes stuff. This mm-hmm. is great.
Yeah, nobody's going to really know how you feel. And mm-hmm. what you think and where you want to go, unless you say the things you want to say and ask for the things that you want.
Yes.
And that goes back into this communication of, if I cannot communicate my own needs and desires, why would the world and anybody else around me ever give them to me?
Absolutely. So good.
I love that. Jason, thank you so much for being on the podcast. And these will all be in the show notes for you, so you can grab this link and then ways to connect with Jason. Definitely go and find him on all of the socials, whichever one's your favorite. He's on the Tiki Talkies and the Instagrams and the Facebooks. So go find him where you hang out. And until next time, we will see you all next week.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Top Shelf Creator Podcast. You can find us on Instagram, LinkedIn, and TikTok at Top Shelf Creator. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and we would love to see you share it with a friend. And give us a review wherever you listen to help us reach more creators and entrepreneurs just like you.